Good evening, Demon fans, and welcome back to the Demon Land podcast. My name is Andy, and a depleted Demon's missing two of their biggest stars fall valiantly on a slippery and sodden MCG to overcome the Bombers against all odds to propel themselves back into the top eight with the top four within striking distance. Fittingly, I watched the match at 5:30 a.m. in the city that never sleeps, and as my vacation comes to an end, the Demons have gone 2-2 in my absence from my homeland. The Demonland podcast will return in its regular format next week after the Dockers match. Tonight, though, Bigman will bring you his stats files for the victory at the G over the Bombers, as well as a new segment where he rants away. In addition, he will bring you his preview of the upcoming match against the Fremantle Dockers at the Demons' home away from home and the site of our drought-breaking premiership at Optus Stadium. Take it away, Bigman.
Thanks, Andy, for that warm introduction. Good evening, Demon Landers. Good evening, George, if you are listening. And good evening, Andy. Thanks for that. As I said, what a time to be in America. Crazy times in which we live. What a fantastic performance by the Mighty D's at the MCG on Saturday night. Unfortunately, I've been crook, so apologies for my croaky voice and tonight. But I couldn't make it. I was sick as a dog on the couch watching the footy. Wish I had been there because it was a fantastic performance. And the by all accounts, the Mighty Demon Army writ large was loud and boisterous and was a big factor in the performance. I think I'm a real believer in the influence of the crowd. And so once again, well done, D's fans, for getting there. 55,000, I think, was the crowd. Really terrific performance. I really keen this week to get into it. Andy let me know the ratings were well down from last week, so he said I needed to get a bit more fired up. I didn't know what he meant, and I went back and listened to the first 20 minutes of last week's podcast, and I joked on Demonland that it sounded a bit like a football version of the BBC shipping forecast. So I thought I'd get a bit more fired up tonight and take a leaf out of Corns's volcano, because we all know the best thing for ratings is controversy and angst. So I'm going to give it tonight. And well, there goes the dog. He's passionate about it as well. So I'm going to take this opportunity to debut a new segment for Demon Land, Bin Man's Unleashed segment, or Bin Man Unleashed, aka Bin Man's Dump. So many things really burn my bacon that I didn't really know what to pick. So many options: the AFL, the footy media, umpiring, Hawthorn's horrible colour scheme. I could have chosen so many of them, and was actually going to run with the AFL Commission, and they frustrate me so much with their emphasis on profit rather than being stewards of our great game. But what I landed on that really, really grinds my gear, and it rose its ugly head again in the lead up to this game and afterwards, I have to say, is the complete lack of respect given by the footy media and the general footy public to Simon Goodwin. Even more frustrating is that lack of respect, and I would argue a lack of perspective, is echoed and amplified by many Demon fans. It just drives me nuts. By any reasonable measure, Goody's tenure as senior coach has been incredibly successful. It just has. These fans know better than most how hard it is to be successful in AFL footy as a coach and for a team. Leaving aside our incredibly long sustained period of wildly unsuccessful at the D's, Goody's numbers stack up against the very best coaches in AFL-VFL history. How many coaches in the 160-year history of the game that have coached more than 150 games have a win-loss percentage above 50% and have also won at least one flag? Well, if you don't know the answer is only 14. 14 such coaches in 160-year history of the sport. Jock Mahale, Kevin Sheedy, Alan Jeans, Tom Hafey, David Parkin, Ron Barassi, Lee Matthews, Norm Smith, Alex de Clarkson, Dick Reynolds, Chris Scott, John Longmire, and yes, Simon Goodwin. 14 in 160 years have a record comparable to Simon Goodwin. When he took over the team in 2017 from Paul Roos, we still had a pretty average, albeit improving, list. In his first season, we missed out on finals by just 0.5% in a heartbreaker. He brought in a number of innovations, including that flying V off the halfback flank that arguably ushered in the 666 rule. Such was its success. In 2018, in his second year as coach, playing an exciting, unpredictable back half transition game, which remarkably is feeling similar to what we're playing now in many ways, we had an incredible run in the back half of the season. There's another theme that's been strong under Goody's coaching regime. Had probably the two greatest wins I've ever seen live, beating the Cats and the Hawks at the MCG in front of delirious full crowds of red and blue D's fans going bananas. We made it to a preliminary final. Heartbreak, yes, I know, but we made it to a prelim. As I said, I was out there for that game. That was one of the worst games I've seen, but no disgrace to be beaten by the eventual flag winner. He took the opportunity mass injury afforded in 2019 to retool his method, introducing the contest and all-team defense model that became the template for a flag win just 2 years later. We stalled in 2020, but it was the COVID year, and we were unlucky that the shorter quarters negated our clear fitness advantage. So, you know, that's not quite a mulligan, but it was an unusual year all round. We won the flag in 21, of course, playing a final series that some described as the greatest ever performance in a finals. Our grand final win was ridiculously good. Exhilarating football. Bang, bang, bang. Starting with our incredible win over the Cats in round 23 to secure top spot, that was the greatest 6 weeks of my football supporting life, and I thank you, Goody, for it. We finished top four in 2022. Sure, we went out in straight sets, but come finals, we were completely banged up and were never in the hunt. Ask any Dogs, Cats, and Pies fans how easy it is to back up after winning a flag. In 23, we again finished top four, a remarkable performance given our injuries up forward, but unfortunately, we also again went out in straight sets. How you see the loss to the Pies depends a bit on your perspective. We came out a bit flat, it has to be said, cross. But soon after, we lost Gus, and the first quarter was a write-off. So definitely a mitigating factor, as was not having him for basically an entire game. So a tick, big tick that we're able to get back into that game. We played brilliantly for the rest of the game and really should have won. Big tick. Again, that was remarkable given we had no Gus, Laurie didn't go into the centre, and really that we only played three quarters of footy. Why did we lose? Because we didn't take our chances. That's 100% on the players, not Goody. His method and game day coaching stood up. We went into the Blues game down last year in the finals, down our last surviving specialist key position forward in JVR, and still reeling from the Gus incident. Be that as it may, forever and a day, fans of the club and the club itself will rue that loss. We left one on the table. I think we win that game against the Blues, and we are a huge chance to go on to win the flag. We were by far the better team that day against the Blues. We should have won that match. Again, why did we lose? Because we didn't take our chances. And again, that was on the players, not Goody. Goody's method and game day coaching stood up in a big game again. The players didn't. 2024? Well, we already had a young list, as I talked about at the beginning in the preseason, but started the season down two of our starting 22, two fit season players in Smithy and Gus. We couldn't replace either, obviously, so effectively the list becomes 42. So two players down before we even play a game in anger. Other senior players in Petty, Benny Brown, T-Mac, Hunter, McAdam and Clary all had very interrupted pre-seasons. And another best 22 senior player in Melk is out to well past the halfway point of the season, in fact, to the two-thirds of the season. The first third of the season, we were given an insane schedule with lots of travel, two byes and 2 5-day breaks. We lost more senior games when Benny Brown is a bust fitness-wise, Hunter ditto, May gets his rib broken, Salo out for 5 weeks, Clary has hand surgery, and Lever out for 5 weeks. We lose our best, most dynamic player for the rest of the season after another sickening contact injury in track. We are regularly forced to select a very young, inexperienced team, teams more akin to teams who are in a rebuilding phase. We are fielding a team more akin, as I said, to a team in the third year of a rebuilding phase than a genuine contender. All the while, Goody is trying to implement a new method, which is ironic given the Goody is too predictable myth. And don't get me started about the myth that he isn't tactically switched on. He tactically, just in this game just gone, he tactically schooled one Scott after schooling his brother earlier in the season when we beat the Cats, not to mention schooling everybody's tactical fanboy, Sam Mitchell. We had the off-season from hell, multiple senior players injured, down two of our starting 22 and down two on our list. And with two-thirds of the season gone, we're in the top eight, only 2 points from the top four. And despite the wailing of the henny pennies in this season, we are right up to our ears in it and a good chance to go on to win a flag. Objectively, that is bloody impressive, as is Goody's overall coaching record. Facts are facts. Now, the lack of respect that I'm talking about could be seen in full force in the lead-up to the game this week regarding his non-selection of a specialist ruck. Listen to Goody's answer to another inane question about our forward line in his post-match presser, which I will play ahead of the stats file after my rant. Asked about the forward line mix working in the last 2-3 weeks where it hadn't been, implying something radical had changed, he politely pointed out that the only change to that mix has been bringing in Melksham, and that Pets, JVR and the Disco Inferno have played together for most of this season. Cohesion is critical in sport, he pointed out, and that takes time, he also pointed out. It takes continuity of selection. That's exactly what they've been doing, continuity in selection and building cohesion. And we are seeing the fruits of that approach. And seriously, does anyone really think Fullerton would have helped us beat the Bombers? Bloke is barely passing muster as a ruck at VFL level. Despite the frankly ridiculous hand-wringing on Demonland about selection, we won the raw clearance count, which, by the by, is not a particularly useful stat these days as it's not a measure of impact, but we won it nonetheless. What is a measure of impact is scores from stoppages, which critically we won by 14 points. In fact, it was arguably the deciding factor in our win, given they scored 3 more points from turnover than us. That doesn't happen without Petty in the side, doesn't happen without JVR, obviously, and without Disco giving them both a bit of a chop out. Goody deserves credit for his selection this week and praise, not the brickbats that he got and the criticism that he faced in the lead up to it. Which is why when responding to a question in the presser about who we might play in the ruck against Frio, he visibly bristled before noting the option he ran with this week just work, literally just work, you know, an hour before that question is being asked, implying the obvious. Why would we change something that literally had just proved successful? I share his frustration. Where are all the comments on Demonland and in the media acknowledging Goody got it right this week and that they got it oh so wrong? It's remarkable, really. We win a flag and then out in straight sets twice and people are calling for Goody's head. Do people really not understand how difficult winning a flag is or how difficult it is to finish top four? I mean, surely, of any group of fans, these fans understand these things. What exactly do people expect? The nongs in the media will remain nongs. It's why I've basically stopped watching and listening to them. But come on, D's fans, don't support and amplify their rubbish about a legend of the Melbourne Football Club. Goody's record is only matched in the 166-year history of the Melbourne Football Club by the great Norm Smith and, of course, Frank Checker Hughes, who won 3 consecutive flags in 39, 40 and 1941. That's rarefied air and makes Simon Goodwin unquestionably a great of our club, the oldest professional football club in the world. Get behind him, D's fans. Get behind Goody. Bloke's a legend of the club and we should all be bloody proud to have him at our club and thank our lucky stars that he is. All right, now we'll get back down to a little less sort of hyper. And we're going to play a clip now from a couple of the questions that I noted above he was asked in his presser. Really fascinating responses. I really enjoy Simon Goodwin's post-match pressers. He's not the world's best. He's no McRae in his sort of oration skills, but if you listen to him and get past his sort of affectations, he's a student of the game who's really, really interesting to listen to. And so the questions about cohesion in sport, or his answer about cohesion in sports, a really interesting one. And also, as I noted, that discussion on the forward line, potential selection mix next week against Darcy and Jackson. So, Andy, if you could play that clip right now, that would be great.
Do you feel like you found something in the last fortnight with your forward mix, maybe a bit smaller, a bit more mobile? Has that been a noticeable difference?
I think what we've found in the last probably 8 weeks is we're just starting to build a bit of cohesion. Obviously, Melksham's the only real change that we've had to the front half of the ground, but we've been able to play Turner, Petty, Van Rooyen and Fritsch together for a good chunk of games now, which is, you know, cohesion's big in sports. So just to be able to play that group together, you can see them starting to evolve and grow together, which is exciting for our footy club. It's been an area of the ground that we've wanted to keep working and getting better at, and we think we've got some tools and mediums that can win the ball in the air but also at ground level.
Any concern over coughing up those last four goals of the game? There was the game against North as well where they came hard late. Is that just teams going all out to win, or, you know, are there concerns at your end?
I don't like it as a coach. But there's no concerns. We just lost contest and lost centre bounce. We certainly didn't play safe. We continued to try and play the right way and win the game. And clearly Essendon were rolling the dice in terms of how they wanted to play forward of the ball. So, you know, credit to our boys. We kept playing. We didn't quite get it on the scoreboard that we would have liked. But we walk away with a good win.
How did your injury was tonight?
Pretty sure we're all clear at this stage. So you never know what Monday might throw up. But at the moment, we're all clear.
Any updates on Max Gould?
Yeah, look, he's progressing well. You know, and we're not going to put a time limit on it because we're not sure. But he did have a good couple of days the last few days, so we'll assess him midweek and see where he's at. But we'll make that call later in the week.
You get two rucks probably next week with Darcy coming back to play with Jackson. Would you be prepared to do the same thing if Gordon isn't fit?
We'll have a look at those options for us. Clearly it worked for us tonight, but doesn't mean it's necessarily going to work next week. So we'll have a look at their team, look at where their strengths are, how we might set up around the ball. But, you know, that's something we'll discuss, you know, throughout the week. I'm just going to enjoy this one tonight, if that's okay.
Thanks, Andy. Much appreciated. As I said, really interesting insight into Goody's coaching philosophy there with his discussion about cohesion and continuity. And I think that goes a long way to explaining what he's often been criticised for, being too stubborn in selection, and the value that he puts on having particularly his defensive unit. And now he's talking about the forward line unit playing together over an extended period of time. And so he's right that those three amigos, JVR, Disco and Petty, of now what it's been 8-9 games in a row that they've played together, that's a big block of time, and it's all done with being in our best possible shape, giving ourselves our best possible chance come the finals. So thanks for that, Goody. Love your work. All right, just before we jump into the stats file, just some general stats. Bombers, again, had a really high uncontested possessions. As I noted last week, the D's and the Bombers now have a really similar game style and statistical profile. The only real big difference, point of difference, is the Bombers have a much higher uncontested, or the Bombers higher uncontested disposal numbers. And we saw that on Saturday night with the Bombers having 45 more uncontested disposals, which is interesting on such a wet night. Most of them, 30 of them, were handballs. They had 30 more handballs than us. And we saw what they were trying to do with them in the first quarter. Chain out from stoppage, create overlap and get behind us, and get those goals out the back. And it has to be said, it worked pretty well. The rain made that tactic harder to execute, but as I'll note later, there were some also some interesting tactical responses from Goody that blunted the effectiveness of those sort of handball chains. I thought they were pretty impressive in that first quarter, which I'll get to in a sec. The second stat really I wanted to touch on was the kids are all right redux. Melbourne, as I noted before, in Bin Man Unleashed, is how young our list is this year, but also how young the teams that we're putting out and for the last 6 or 7 weeks are. In this game, our average age was 25.3. The Bombers' average age was 26.2. And remembering, the Bombers are on the rebuild phase in what may be the third year of their rebuild phase. So the average age of our team that ran out on the weekend, 25.3 to their 26.2. Average games, the D's 107.8. 114.8 for the Dons. So they had a significantly more experienced side. Caddy was the youngest player on the field at 19. We had the next seven youngest. The Bombers had three players with 50 games or under, and we had seven. It really is impressive, and I think it's important for us to factor in that youth, how young our side is, you know, in terms of how we assess where we're at. So, for instance, our running out of gas in that last quarter is to be expected to a degree, you'd think. Player ratings, it's a really important number, the player ratings. It's a excellent, probably the best, to be honest, sort of measure of performance. I thought this was brilliant. The highest rated player by some margin on the field was Coz in his 150th game. What a brilliant performance by the young fella. His predicted rating coming into this game was only 9.8, and he had a rating in this game of 23. Anything above 20 is considered like a super elite game of footy. And he was enormous. And in fact, I said to someone during the week that I've found myself sort of underestimating or underrating how good he is. So seeing the highlights for his 100th game, I should say, not 150th game, really was a great reminder of just like how freakishly talented this young man is. And his footy IQ is totally off the charts, just nuts. Our second highest rating player was Nibbler, 15.6. That's about his season. That's a bit above his season average. But really, he is, you know, just a heart and soul player. He was terrific on the weekend, and he's just quietly putting together a great season of footy. Riv and Fritter were equal third with 13.3. Great games from both of them. Really important game from Fritter, who's faced a fair bit of criticism in the last few weeks on Demonland. Excellent performance. I thought his sort of attack on the marking contest was really important. A number of goals were created by him making sure that the ball came to ground. Windsor was next with 13 rating points against his predicted rating of 7.7. And then Judd McVee with 12.7 against his predicted rating of 9.8. The kids really stepped up playing games well above their predicted rating. So brilliant, brilliant leadership from them. And just a comment about Judd McVee, what a performance. So all the stats have got some sort of, you know, none of them are conclusive in of themselves. You've got to look at the whole package of stats and sort of triangulate them. So, you know, I would have given him a higher rating than 12.7. It was a fantastic performance. What it doesn't pick up is what he completely shut their sort of potentially most damaging player in Skinner. I thought he schooled Skinner, embarrassed him. Could not have been more impressed. His time and space, he's just got that thing that best players have, which is an ability to make good decisions under pressure, and that sense that he's got more time than those around him. I think his upside is enormous. And, you know, I think we'll be talking about him within a very short period of time up with the Dacos's of this world. And he is a legitimate star. As I noted last week, I love having AMW in the side too. His pressure, I would touch on that in a sec, has been first class in his two games so far. But I think he's really important because it allows McVee to play higher up the ground. And when you get him up higher up the ground, he really can start hurting oppositions with his ball use. Fantastic performance from the young players again. I think it's important to note, thinking about this game, that the Bombers were in fact pretty impressive. I thought that the scoreline flattered us a bit, as evidenced by the expected score, 71.3 to 75.5. So that's a really curious stat, that one. They won that game by, well, before, you know, they were ahead on expected score by 4.2 points. And, you know, really, really, really highlights the importance of accuracy. Most of that, some of that was their inaccuracy, but really we were plus 12 on our expected score, because we've so accurate. You get Disco Inferno kicking it from, you know, outside 50, those long bombs. That's probably only a 30-70 kick for he slots it. Ditto for Melksham from the boundary on that, you know, turning it around the body. Some brilliant kicking, and really it's, you cannot overstate how important accuracy is in footy. I thought McKay was terrific for them, as was Ridley. Their defence has improved out of sight, though probably still give up too many slingshot goals, but that's really a function of how they structure up and play. You know, they look to create that opportunity. They expose themselves to the slingshot goal, and we were good enough to hurt them on the turnover. So impressive from us from that perspective. Corbell looks a player, and Ditto Martin, he looks a gun. I thought we did a really good job negating Merritt, but he's a total gun. There was one sort of defensive failure early in the first quarter, the first goal, I think, that they kicked, where Nibbler must have handed off, and whoever he handed off to, because Nibbler ran with him for the whole game, whoever he handed off to didn't cover Merritt, and he was all by himself out the back of a contest, and he kicked in board for a beautiful kick to set up their first goal. But after that, I thought we did a brilliant job of negating him. As I said, Cos was the highest rated player on the ground, but the next three after Cozzy were Bombers, Martin, McKay and Ridley. But having said that, Skinner was schooled by a kid in Judd McVee, who's still only 20. And I thought Skinner did some really selfish things. You know, a couple of shots at goal, which just weren't on. He would be such a frustrating player to have in your team. That's, you know, really poor form from a senior player. One can only imagine the reaction by some Demonland posters if Cox was a demon. Some pretty soft efforts from him. And those of us who would like the D's to show some more niggle, and Andy, I'm looking at you here, they would have been well pleased by Langers, Colton, others getting stuck into Cox. And it feels a bit like the unsociable D's are back. I reckon they made some for all of the talk about you know, us not going in with a ruck and the pre-criticism of Goodwin for that decision. I thought they had a bad night at the selection table. They went way too tall on a wet night, as evidenced by subbing out 2 meter Peter. When was it? It was halfway through the third quarter, wasn't it? So I thought, you know, you could argue they lost it at selection by running with such a tall team. Having said all of that, the Dons are definitely tracking in the right direction, I think. But a couple of things to consider in terms of where the Dons are at compared to where the D's are at. Take Draper and Merritt out of last night's side, who are probably the closest equivalent to Maxi and Track. Their ruckman and their best player. And how would have they gone in that match last night if they had neither of those two players? And as I said before, you know, the relative youth of the side, we're running a younger side that's more akin to a team in a rebuild phase. Centre bounce attendances against the Eagles, the top five were Rivers with 24, Clayton Oliver, Max Gorn, Jack Viney and Sparrow. In this game, the top five were Rivers again, Clayton Oliver second again, Cozzy had 17 centre bounces attendances, and Jack Viney 16. So that was a big spike by Cozzy last night, and Van Ruin had 15 and Harry Petty had 12. The ruck contests were really interesting. It was fantastic. Jacob Van Ruin was a massive factor in this game in terms of turning the sort of advantage back to us from the centre clearances. He had 48 hitouts. Harrison Petty, though, did a lot of donkey work. In that he rucked that entire first quarter, and then he was the player giving Roo a chop out after that. He had 44 hitouts. I thought that was pretty impressive. Just with Van Ruin, he had 48 hitouts, 17 to advantage. So 31% to advantage, which was pretty impressive, I thought. This was an interesting fact. The opposition hitouts, ruck contests, Sam Draper went to 79 ruck contests. contests. He had 33 hitouts, 12 to advantage, so not much better than Roo. Peter Wright only went to 11. So, and then Nick Cox went to 8. And so again, you've got to question the selection. Like, they put a lot of eggs in the Sam Draper basket, I thought. And he looked cooked near the end of the third quarter when there was some footage of him near the bench or coming off and sucking sort of deep breaths in on the bench. So I wonder whether they might have been better sharing, you know, it around with some medium-sized key forwards rather than relying so heavily on Sam Draper, because it just simply didn't work for him, as evidenced by the numbers. All right, so let's get back into the red and blueprint. Well, last week's game was the best example all season of the red and blueprint. Well, I think this week is the best example of what I think we're going to be playing in this back half that I've been talking about all season, and I'm calling it now the hybrid model. So this week, I think we saw the rise of the hybrid. So the four things in the blueprint, it's been interestingly talked about in the media a fair bit in this last week and after our last couple of wins. Core to the way we want to play our best footy is defense, but at the heart of everything is contest and pressure. So as I've noted, whatever method we play, whether it's the sort of full forward half or whether it's more transition or whether it's a hybrid, which I think is where we're going to land, it doesn't work without that contest and pressure. And really, I don't think any game plan works anymore in footy unless you bring that contest. And I think that's what's driving these sort of fluctuating results is, you know, teams cannot be up every week to play that level. I mean, Melbourne did for a long time, but we saw the impact of attempting to do so at the end of the 22 finals and the 23 finals. You know, it just simply may not be possible to play that high level contest game for a full season, which is why I think that we've attempted to, for the first part of the season, play that red and blueprint and then move towards a more sort of hybrid model and potentially come finals sort of leaning into the contest. So start off with defense, opposition and score. Like last week, another fantastic defensive performance given we were so aggressive on transition. And I think that's really important to note. If teams play a transition game, by definition, they're going to open themselves up to giving up goals on the rebound. It's just, you know, you can't bake a cake without breaking some eggs. But this week, not only were we aggressive on transition, unlike the last week, for instance, we really pushed up high on defense, which we've doing in different games. It was quite a sort of unusual game from that perspective, I thought. Each quarter felt a little bit different, but this game was, we were set up defensively much differently than we were against the Lions, and we pushed up really high. We pushed up high in defense, which again, that exposes us to turnovers and exposes it to give sort of goals out the back. So our defensive work was even more meritorious, I think. That said, we were really lucky not to have conceded more in the first quarter. And I thought our structure looked a little wobbly again, as evidenced by those out the back goals that we gave up, which we hardly ever do in times past. But, you know, that's what you expose yourself when, particularly if you combine a transition game with pressing up your half back line and your defenders really high up the ground to compress it. The key to our defense is not our back seven, though. It's our all-team defense. Just on that last point, I think that their late flurry of goals shows how hard it is to defend transition, particularly when setting up so high, particularly if you're sort of pressure drops off just even a little bit and your running power drops off and your ability to spread and cover the outlet. So, which goes to this point, the key to our defense is, you know, not really our back six, or partly it is, but it's our all-team defense, which in addition to players having the discipline to play their roles and to get into the right spot structurally, Petty and Sparrow, for example, our all-team defense relies on being able to spread, cover the ground and work hard to get to the mark and stop them play on, which I thought was a deciding factor in this game. We after that first quarter when we couldn't quite contain that, we did a great job of stopping them moving it easily end to end. As I said, so I thought we were a bit off defensively in the first quarter, but we really worked it out thereafter. Intercepts last week, we had 64 intercepts, 10 more than the Eagles, and 15 intercept marks, which was an improvement on the previous week, down 5 though. This week we had 87 intercepts, 2 less than them, so they had 89 intercepts, and we had 19 intercept marks, so a sort of increase on the previous week, which was terrific, and only gave up 7, so we're plus 2 for intercept marks. Intercept marks, it felt like Mackay got all 17 of those intercept marks. There was a period there where we could not stop him marking the ball, which was a bit frustrating. Marks inside 50. Last week we took 21 marks inside 50 to the Eagles 15 plus 6. This week that was flipped, minus 5. They took 13 inside 50, I'd be guessing, but I think a big chunk of them would be in the first quarter and in the last 6 or 7 minutes. But we only took 8 marks inside 50, which was curious, I thought. And, you know, perhaps that was to do with how we were playing. We got our chances out the back, but not many of them were marks. But we were definitely playing a sort of contest pressure game. So speaking of which, the contest and contested possessions, we 129 contested possessions last week for plus 25. That was awesome. Well, this week we had 142 contested possessions. The Bombers were impressive on this front, and I think it was interesting. Scott mentioned this, that he thought their contest was better than the pressure numbers sort of indicated, which was an interesting comment. And it does sort of touched on, you know, the sort of limitations of the pressure numbers, particularly if you only look at them sort of in isolation. But 142 contested possessions is super. Just a reminder, possessions are different to disposals, and they make up all sorts of things, possessions, but possessions are often confused with disposals. Disposables are kicks and handballs. Possessions are ground ball gets. There's a whole bunch of things that make up possessions. But 140 contested possessions. 142 contested possessions, super impressive. I thought this was curious. Post-clearance, where we've historically done well in and have in different games this season, they actually did better than us in some respects. Loose ball gets, they were plus 4. Hard ball gets, they were plus 2 post-clearance. Contested marks, they were plus 3. The only thing that we beat them in post-clearances were freeze 4. So I thought that was interesting. But pre-clearance, this was a really unusual number. So we were plus 6 in hard ball gets for pre-clearance, so before the ball's cleared, and plus 15 for loose ball gets, which is, I think it was a really telling number. And it's what Scott was referencing when he said that he just didn't feel that they were going hard enough after the ball when it was out loose. And it speaks to, I think, our improved running power and ability to cover the ground to be able to get to those loose balls. Pressure last week, huge pressure game, one of our best all season. So we finished with a match average of 191, which was incredible. Finished the last quarter was 199, the first quarter was 200. You know, that's a very impressive. This week was a bit different. I think the way Essendon play with that spreading and use of handballs, by definition, always there will be lower pressure games against the Bombers just because of their method. But the average was 176. Their pressure actually was probably, I'd be guessing, almost their highest for the season. Perhaps, I'd have to look, but they averaged 190 for this game, so almost what we averaged last week. We were minus 14 for under the pressure rating. So first quarter was basically even. Second quarter was 199 to 201. Third quarter was 164 to their 207. We were minus 43 on the pressure gauge. So, you know, they kept going, that's for sure. They dropped away a little bit in the last, but so did we, 168 to 167. So I thought that was interesting. Last week, our top 5 pressure players were Trent Rivers, Jack Viney, Nibbler, Caleb Windsor, and Andy Meniz-Wakefield. And sort of following on this theme of the kids are all right and the leadership that these young players are playing, showing this season and particularly in the last month or so. This week, our top 5 were Trent Rivers. His season average, he had 19 pressure acts and 52 pressure points. His season average for pressure points is 28.3. Fantastic performance. Number 2 was Andy Meniz-Wakefield. Just awesome. 19 pressure points, pressure acts, the same as Trent Rivers, and he came off at the beginning of, or maybe even the end of the last third quarter. So for three quarters of a game, he had as many pressure acts as Trent Rivers, and more than the Colt, for instance, and more than many other players. Fantastic performance from him. As I said last week, I could see him staying in this team and not coming out of it again. He just might be that player that we've lacked since Jets left, that small defender who can take the sort of best small forward from the opposition. Nibbler was third with 22 pressure acts. The guy's a legend. Colt continually impresses me with both his effort and speed in covering the ground. He had 18 pressure acts. And then the next one was Harrison Petty. He had 20 pressure acts, 43 pressure points. His season average is 28, so super impressive from Pets. And again, I think the sort of discussion about selecting Petty and Sparrow and others, really, you know, one of the challenges with assessing any players is we don't know what role they've been asked to play by Goody. We do know that Goody values role players who play the role that they've been assigned, that have the discipline to do it, and that applying pressure is one of them. And we can all be absolutely certain any player who's regularly selected in a side that Goody coaches is following their instructions to a T. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the team. So impressive from the young fellas. Again, just a note on pressure players is that it's just looking at the numbers, there's often a weighting towards certain players and defenders don't. So McVee's pressure numbers weren't huge, but, you know, he applied great pressure. So, you know, I think it's to do with partly to do with the fact that in the way that these are calculated, tackles or any time you contact a player is the way to score the highest. And he sort of uses his evasive skills and sort of ability to read the play to, you know, he doesn't need to tackle as often. But I thought he was just outstanding in this game. This is a really interesting one. So ground ball gets in 2021 to 23, ground ball gets were one of our key indicators. You know, it's all about the contest and it's all about winning the contest. And ground ball gets was a good sort of indicator of when we were number one in the AFL every season, I think, between 21 and 23 for winning ground ball gets. As I noted during the sort of first third of the season, ground ball gets seemed to be less significant in the transition back half game, as we were winning games early this season despite handily losing ground ball gets, often by 10, 15 or 20. The transition model and our older style forward half model, in both of those methods, contest is key. And we really have dialed up our attack on the ball in the last 2-3 weeks. And so what we're looking at now is it looks like our best contest footy of 21-23, but much better on transition in the 2024 style. And I feel like that's the hybrid Goody is trying to develop. That's the hybrid that I'm talking about. A sort of a really good blend of his territory game and the sort of 2023-2024 transition games. And you can really see this in the ground ball get numbers. Against the Roos, we were minus 10 for ground ball gets. Against the Lions, we were plus 11. We were plus 20 against the Eagles. And in this game, we were plus 15. We had 109 ground ball gets. By way of comparison, we had 107 against the Lions. So we really dialed up winning those ground balls. Tackles inside 50 against the Eagles, we had 56 tackles in total to their 52 plus 2. We had only 6 tackles inside 50 to their 19 minus 13. This week we changed that around a little bit. They actually tackled really well all game, and that was a point that Scott made in his press. He was happy with their effort and contest to a degree, and that was evidenced by the tackle numbers, 56 to 70. So they were plus 14 for tackles. Tackles inside 50, we laid 10 tackles inside 50 this week to their 7, so plus 3. So our forward 50 pressure was terrific. Big tick after last week. Disco and Colt led the way with tackles inside 50. They both had 2 tackles inside 50, which is terrific for 2 young fellas again. So again, those young players really standing up and being leaders. And I just loved, speaking of Disco, I just loved the way he thumped the ball. Like, they're big boy kicks, those two ones that he launched, particularly the first goal that he kicked from outside 50, really dead straight, and, you know, good leg on him. Clearances, this was the big talking point. We're going to get smashed in clearances. Goodies, you know, what is he doing? You know, Jesus, we need a new coach. This is ridiculous. But what happens? Well, as I noted, that the raw numbers are less sort of relevant these days in terms of sending clearances. Against the Eagles, we were down 10 for sending clearances. Remember, this is with Maxi in the team and plus 5 for stoppage clearances. With no Maxi in the team and running with Petty and Van Ruin and a little bit of a chop out from Disco, so no Maxi, we were plus 3 for sending clearances. These are just the raw numbers, and plus 9 for, we had 9 more stoppage clearances than them. This despite the fact that they had 16 more hitouts than us and 4 more hitouts to advantage. So, you know, really impressive on that front. Jones, who I really sort of have to admit that I don't enjoy his commentary at all, he noted that we brought an extra to the stoppage. It's not clear if he meant one more than Essendon, or that he meant one more than we usually do, as our normal routine is to have one less player at the stoppage. We also brought, he noted, and Hodge noted, that we also brought the high half forwards up to stoppages and crowded that area, one to minimise Draper's advantage. But as Demonland poster Binman's PA noted on Demonland, it also made it much more difficult for the Bombers to use those handballs to chain out from stoppage by hand and to get out into space and to create that overlap. So on both fronts, that was a really successful tactical move by Goody and deserves a big tick for that. But those tactical decisions have an implication for our method. For one thing, we use that spare that we create by playing one down at stoppages behind the ball in an intercepting role, which would help explain why we didn't do that well in terms of intercept and intercept marks differentials, basically breaking even. Whereas in past seasons, when we're playing, you know, when we're as playing as higher pressure and as strong in the contest as we were in this game, in past seasons we would smash teams for intercepts, particularly intercept marks, when we're playing that sort of game, because we would put the sort of ball kicker under so much pressure they'd cough it up, and we had the extra behind the ball. Contested marks, not a night for contested marking. There are only 11 taken. They took 7, we took 4. That said, I thought we completed super hard in the air, and those three big boys did a great job bringing the ball to ground, as did Fritter. Okay, transition from back half, which is the that really is the transition part of the game, and the turnover. I'll get to the turnovers in a sec. Against the Roos, we scored 25 points from the back half. We upped that against the Lions, 37. In the Eagles, up again, 58 from the back half. This one was really interesting, and I think it was sort of tactical. We only scored 24 from the back half. They scored 32 from their back half, so more than we give up per game, which is 29.7. It was quite, you know, that's a curious number that we only scored 24, but I think that's a function again of how high we pushed up our half back line and our back line. So if you look at the numbers for where we scored from the scoring region, that you can look on in the stats file thread on Demonland, put together by a Wheelow rating. So, and the Wheelow ratings, by the way, is where I'm getting all of these numbers from. I really urge anyone who's interested in stats and data to download the app and use it. It's a really excellent tool, really navigable, really easy to compare and to sort of pull out numbers that you want to do. But stats file on Demonland, he puts up also the scoring chain region, and we got a big chunk of our scoring from the middle. So that would again emphasize that sort of the benefit of pushing up high against the ground. Pushing up high then, of course, exposes you out the back, which is why I think that we gave up 32 points from their defensive half. Sources, so this is a key one, and turnover, you know, the game is all about turnover now, and so this was an area that clearly we came into the season looking to improve. Our turnover scores against the Roos, we scored 33 points, they scored 46, so down 13. Against the Lions, down 8, 39 points to 47. Against the Eagles, of course, as we talked about last week, we completely obliterated them, and that's where we won the game. We're plus 56 from turnover in that game, 79 to 23. But in this game, we were down 3 for turnover. So as I say, a big part of that was giving up those goals out the back. I thought we were lucky not to give up more in the first, and then we gave up those junk time goals in the last, which was super frustrating. I think most of them were on turnover. So Goody wouldn't be thrilled with that, but it was obviously, you know, as I said, you have to be prepared to give up points on turnover if you're going to be playing a turnover game yourselves, but also if you make a tactical decision to be quite aggressive where your defensive line sits. So that was a big factor. But the deciding factor in the game was stoppages. So, you know, increasingly I said during the first third of the season, I had an asterisk on the importance of stoppages and centre bounces, and sort of made the argument that they're of limited, you know, importance this year with this game at the red and blueprint. But as we move towards a hybrid model that is more contest focused, I think, same as ground ball gets, they're coming back into focus being super important. And so we scores from stoppages were one from centre bounce, one goal 1-7 to one goal zip 6, which I think was in that last quarter, that second goal that they got quickly. So plus one, but around the ground, so you take it away. So we did a great job of negating. Remember, this is Draper. That was the whole point. Draper was going to kill us out of the centre. They could only get one goal, and that was deep in the last quarter from the centre bounce. So we did an awesome job. And McWalter deserves credit for here for their structures and the way we minimised their advantage from the centre bounce. For them to only get one goal from the centre bounce was awesome. We were plus 13 from stoppages, so 3-3-21 to 1-2-8. So, you know, big credit has to go to Petty and to Disco and to Rue for fighting so hard at those stoppages. And also to Goody for that tactical setup that I mentioned before in terms of the high half forwards coming up and bringing an extra to the stoppage. So finally, in the stats file, fitness, huge factor, as expected by our pressure, as I expected and as evidenced by our pressure and all-team defensive running and spread and our sort of the way we're really pushing up to stop the overlap, which is, I really love that, getting across the man, the marks, stopping them, moving the ball with ease. We are looking so much closer to our optimal shape. We gave up late goals again, which is frustrating, and was certainly frustrating for Goody, as he mentioned. But I'm not so sure that we ran out of gas. I mean, perhaps we did a little bit, but certainly not to the same degree as we did against the Lions and the Roos, which I just think we have to accept that such a young team is likely to sort of fade a bit at the end of games. And I was amazed that so-called experts didn't point out the fact we were coming off a six-day break to their eight. It has a major impact on games of football. I've talked about that before. Melksham, who did in a post-match interview, I heard him do, certainly he was quick to point it out when asked about how he recovered from the game last week after his first game back after 12 months. It's a big factor. I just think that, so maybe we did fade a little bit, but I think that sort of it was more about the fact we lost momentum with those two quick goals they got, and we couldn't get it back. You know, it's hard to get momentum, rest it back, and the umpiring handed the Bombers that momentum. It was just sort of some appalling decisions. It's so frustrating. Countering that, to be honest, we were lucky in the first quarter with a couple of frees, including that mark that should have been paid. So maybe there's swings and roundabouts there, but I was, to be honest, quietly pleased we didn't give up any more goals in that last part of the quarter. As I discussed last week, and I've discussed a number of times, the Telstra tracker is probably the best publicly available data that provides some evidence of where teams are in terms of their running power and their sort of, you know, where they are in their program. You know, as I noted last week, we're trending super well with that. Just a couple of really important numbers. Total distance, it's unbelievable. Total distance, Ed Langdon ran almost 2 kilometres, 1.6 kilometres more than the next player on the ground, which was Nick Martin. Eddie Langdon also had the 3.4 kilometres, was the most at high speed. They're pretty quick. Their maximum speed, the top four players On the ground for maximum speed were Durham, Redmond, Mackay and Merritt, with Windsor coming in fourth. But the average speed, which is a better one for fitness, because, you know, it's your ability to keep running at a sort of at a good clip. This was a great number. I thought the top five on the ground for average speed were the Colt, 10.8, which is pretty bloody quick. Tommy Sparrow next, 9.8. 9.8 for Andy Moniz-Wakefield as well. Jake Melksham, average speed, 9.5. Pretty impressive for a fella coming back from an ACL. And Cade Chandler, 9.4. Total sprints was really interesting. Nick Martin had the most, 28, but it's the repeat sprints that show work rate. Again, this was a mixed bag. They worked hard. I thought Langford was equal with Sparrow for repeat sprints, number one and two, with Windsor three. Work rate is the one that they look to a lot in the AFL in terms of this is the one that really gives an indication of fitness. Average speed in attack, again, Colt was number one and Jake Melksham was actually equal first with 10 kilometres average speed in attack. And that means when Melbourne have got the ball, so when average speed in attack's when the team with the ball has got the ball. And Moniz Wakefield and Tommy Sparrow. So we had the top four. This is the big one, though. Average speed in defence, which is defined as, average speed of an individual player while the opposition has possession. And this is the one that they really look at. Really good evidence of where a team's at fitness-wise. The Colt, well on top average speed and defence, 11. This is that spreading and getting across the mark that I was mentioned. Andy Moniz Wakefield, 9.6. Nibbler, 9.3. Cade Chandler and Tommy Sparrow. So again, the top five. When we're, you know, when you we see and I see us being top five in that, I know we're in good nick. And just finally, a couple of things on that front. We ran 8 more kilometres than in the match, 298 to 290, which is no small thing in a game of 48 kilometres. Doesn't sound much, but well, it does to me. Try running 8 kilometres. That's a big differential, particularly against a team like the Bombers, who pride themselves on their ability to spread. That's what their game plan's about, is trying to beat the opposition through run and sort of carry. So that was impressive. High speed, 42 kilometres at high speed to their 39. Sprinting, we had 258 total sprints to their 232. Again, that's a big number, 26 differential. And repeat sprints, this was important, 26 to 18. So really impressive performance by the Ds from that perspective in their work rate. Just finally, I heard Goody say that the youth of the team is a factor in how he wants them to play, or I guess how they can play, which makes sense given even with no Gus or Smithy, we still have a core of excellent senior players who are strong in the contest and hard at it. But we also have young players like McVee, Windsor, Colt, Bowie, AMW with good wheels that we want to get out into space. Fortunately, those players are all hard at the contest too, but we want to be able to use them, and we can't smash them all the time in the contest. They just won't make it. So that said, even with a hybrid model being perhaps less contest heavy than the sort of model that we've had in the past, they're still super taxing, and particularly for the young blokes. And so I think it just must be an incredibly tough challenge to get the high performance program right. And for me, that challenge is almost the most critical part of the puzzle in the next 2 or 3 months as we look towards the finals. Can such a young team sustain that full-on intensity that the contest game demands? I think that's going to be a key question, and as I say, a really big challenge for the high performance program to get that right. Alrighty, so quickly, we'll just look at the Freo game. The selection, short version, no changes. I watched the Casey game. Some highlights, I think, for me was Benny Brown. I thought he looked super agile, super mobile. You know, it wouldn't shock me if, you know, we haven't seen the last of Benny Brown, and maybe he might come in late in the season and like he did in 21. Goody's a real student of history, and I think that if you look at what he's done in the past, it's a very good pointer to what he might do to sort of moving forward. So I don't think there will be any changes. There wasn't really anyone banging the door down. You know, Fullerton probably didn't. Varell certainly didn't, or Ferrell, as the commentator kept calling him, which I thought to myself, I want to get him to see, sort of get a bit angrier, so the headline could read, Varell goes feral. That didn't work as well as I'd hoped. But I suspect we'll stick with JVR, Turner and Pets this week, sharing ruck duty. I said before the Bombers game on Demonland that I totally get the logic of going with JVR, Pets and Disco, and I see the logic in doing so again. So my sort of short version is no changes. Yes, they have two excellent rucks in Darcy and Jackson, but if they run with Rue against Darcy, Rue can exploit Darcy's lack of pace and run off him hard. And whilst Pets can't cover Jackson's leap, he has the strength to match him at around the ground stoppages, and I think Disco too. So I'm not, you know, overly fussed with their two ruckmen. I don't think it presents any greater challenge than Draper and waxing with 2 meter Peter. And as I said, having watched the Casey game, I can't really see Fullerton offering anything more than Petty offers in the ruck, and certainly less in around the ground marking and up forward. Ditto Varell. Varell's a couple of seasons, or at least a season, away from senior footy, I suspect. In terms of the game style, so yeah, short version, I don't see any changes. I think they'll stick with the 20-3 that played so well on the weekend just gone, which includes Woey starting a sub again. I heard on the broadcast that he's, I think, nine, but he started as sub more often than any other player. And I think that's a good role for him. I think he'd be happy to be in the side. For me, who else could come in from Casey? I don't think anyone really banged the door down. Laurie was neat in a lot of the work he did. But yeah, the one to watch is Benny Brown. In terms of game style that Freo might bring out, they're, you know, funny game to team to watch. Longmuir is a funny coach as well. I had to laugh watching him do a presser last week. He looks like the way that they've got his Freo clothing, he looks like an extra from Star Trek. They play in a very similar game in some ways to the Dons. So high uncontested disposal numbers. The Bombers are AFL number one for uncontested disposals, and Freo are number four. And they also use handballs in a similar way to the Dons. So, you know, high handballing team, and they like to chain up their handballs to get it out away from the contest and get it out into space and use their leg speed. They've got a lot of good runners like the Dons think they do as well. And like the Dons, they also like to use the width of the ground to try and spread their opponents and create overlap opportunities. But Freo, sort of the difference between, one of the differences between Freo and the Bombers, I think, is Freo are much more prepared to go lateral and hold possession. And they did that a fair bit against Hawks on the weekend. And that was their template against us when they thrashed us in the Alice, though they didn't really need to do much of that lateral, or they didn't need to hold it up very often because we weren't getting across to cover and stopping them playing on, because we clearly had completely dead legs in that match. They did laterally, they crossed to the fat side of the ground and then just, you know, took off. That's why they smashed us, because they opened us up. That won't happen this weekend. We'll get across. We're very different teams now in where we're at in terms of our running power, our dynamism, and our all-team defense. You know, we're in a much better place. We're running on top of the ground. We will get across to stop them playing on. And so, if you know, we'll be more than happy to let them laterally kick back and forth and hold onto the ball like they did against the Hawks. The Hawks were more than happy for them to do that as well. It was, you know, I thought it was a strange game tactically from Freo on the weekend in that loss. You know, we'll let them do that all day. We'll let teams do that all day, because that just means we can get our defense set. I think we'll use very similar tactics as we did against the Bombers to make it more difficult to chain out of stoppages, to negate Jackson and Darcy, to make it difficult for them to get those handballs out, to create overlap by doing what we did and creating congestion around stoppages, bringing the high half forwards up to the stoppages, applying you know, intense pressure on the ball carrier. And the thing that I really like when Melbourne are up and about and we're running on the ground well is when we anticipate those handball chains and we provide frontal pressure and run up and put pressure on the player about to receive the ball. So, you know, that they receive the ball and immediately they've got a D's player in their grill trying to sort of make things difficult for them. So prediction, D's to crack in hard, apply too much pressure for Frio and be too strong in the contest for Frio. Don't believe the hype. This is the test is for Frio, not for Frio's credentials as a real contender, not for Melbourne. You know, don't worry about the each game is a litmus test palaver. This is a litmus test contradicting myself for Frio. Let's see whether they can maintain it. We love this ground, Optus Oval. This is where we won our flag. This is where we won that great prelim against the Cats. A lot of good memories at this ground. We've got an 8-day break. They will plan it to a T to be as fresh as possible. They've got the time to do it. The 8 days important because we take out a day for travel, so they'll be able to do their normal routine. They won't need to change it because of the travel factor. They'll be able to travel on the 7th day. I think they'll go into this game super confident and looking really to pay the Frio back for the loss that we had 90-odd points in the Alice. So I'm really, really confident, looking forward to this game. We win this and we're, as I said, we're into this season, right up to our necks. So that's it for this week. Have a great week, Demon Landers. Thanks for listening and go Redleggers!
That was Bin Man. And I want to thank him for stepping up to the plate in my absence these past 2 weeks. The podcast will return in all its glory next week as we either analyse a famous victory or dissect a devastating loss against the Dockers in Perth. See you next week. Go Demon.
To the top. We've got the fire with the desire.